Good morning. Welcome to another rousing session of Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name's Mel Menon, and I am a member of the Roundtable as well as the Onondaga Citizens League. And it is my distinct pleasure to introduce this morning's panel and you know, just kind of ad lib for a moment. I've had, you know, experience working with each of the individuals on today's panel, and it has been a pleasure working with them, with their teams, their faculty, their staff, and also their students. So really look forward to hearing more from them today. And also just want to note that the current Onondaga Citizens League study, which is called How CNY Works, actually includes a recommendation to promote, expand, and scale up CTE programs in our community. So this is really exciting because today's session really intersects with that recommendation, and we hope that you know, everyone here will take the time to read that as well, because it lends some support to what you'll hear today. So without further ado, today's panel, panelists to my left include Dr. Casey Crable. Casey became the Onondaga Community College's eighth president in the year 2013, and many of us probably remember that moment. We're really excited to have her in our community. Prior to joining OCC, Dr. Crable served for 7 years as president of Raritan Valley Community College, which is in New Jersey. Some of her accomplishments there include setting record student enrollment. She obtained a $4.6 million federal grant from the U.S. Department of Labor to train workers in new career paths, and became the first community college in the country to sign as an environmental stewardship, to sign an environmental stewardship agreement with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, which is very cool. Dr. Crable has also served as president of the College of the Redwoods in Eureka, California, from 1999 to 2006. She received her BA in English from Skidmore College, and an MS in teaching English as a second language, and an EDD in curriculum and instruction, both from the State University of New York at Albany. So Casey's had a broad swath of experiences in different parts of our country and doing all kinds of different things, which is wonderful. Dr. Donna DeCiato, over here on the end, became the superintendent of East Syracuse Manoah Central School District in 2005. ESM is recognized for developing a broad array of career pathways, and including innovative CTE and STEM learning models within business and higher education partnerships, such as Siemens, King & King Architects, and SUNY ESF, just to name a few. In 2013, the district was awarded the Be the Change for Kids Innovation Award by the Nanoscale College of Science and Engineering in New York, and New York State School Board Association. In 2015, ESM was recognized nationally at the White House as one of the first STEM learning ecosystems. Dr. DeCiato was awarded the 2015 Margaret Ashada STEM Leadership Award by the New York State STEM Education Collaborative. Prior to her position at ESM, Dr. DeCiato served for 5 years as Assistant Superintendent for Curriculum and Instruction Services for the Syracuse City School District. So you've had experience in both, which is great. She earned her EDD degree in Educational Leadership from Syracuse University. Phil Grome, or Philip, is the Career and Technical Education Director at Onondaga Madison Cortland BOCES, where he is responsible for leading programs for career and technical education, serving 23 school districts in central New York. As a service provider, he has the opportunity to collaborate with the local business community and institutions of higher education to help prepare students for college and career pathways. As a veteran instructional teacher and leader with a focus on student-centered learning and achievement, Phil began his career as a 9th through 12th grade social studies teacher. He then transitioned to high school principal, district level business official, and career and technical education principal prior to serving in his current position. Phil received a Bachelor of Science degree in Secondary Education Social Studies from the State University at Oswego, and a Master's degree in Education and a Certificate of Advanced Study in School Administration from the State University College at Cortland. So thank you for joining us. And last but not least, Robert Leslie has been the Director of Career and Technical Education at the Syracuse City School District now for 3 years. Prior to his appointment at the district, he served as the Director of Career and Technical Technical and Adult Education at OCM BOCES. So he was there from 2007 to 2014. He has worked in the private sector for over 20 years in areas of plant management, maintenance management, and technical training management. Bob started off his career at Carrier Corporation as a first-line supervisor in the Carlisle Compressor Division, and where he was responsible for supervision, quality, and production. He also held the position of manager of trades and technical training. Bob received a bachelor's and master's degree in technology education from SUNY Oswego, as well as a certificate of advanced studies in leadership studies. So thank you all for joining us, and I'm going to turn it over to you.
Good morning. I'm going to lead the conversation this morning, and first I want to thank you for both inviting us and for making this an important topic. I have often been certainly influenced and admire the topics that are chosen because they're really critical to our region and to our success. And so this is an important one in looking at career and technical education. One of the first things that we want you to know as a panel is that it really is not the vocational education that we knew in the 1940s, 50s, 60s. We certainly recognize and know that during those years, we were in an industrial age. We were looking at the fact that our country was very much in need of a factory model, industrial age type of workforce preparation and preparing for these various trades. However, what we also have learned is by doing so, we in many ways sorted and separated our children. We sorted and separated them. We gave them an education over here rather than one that was integrated and interrelated. So what we're going to talk to you about today is today's career and technical education programs and recognizing the world and how it is shifting and why we need to recognize the importance of how it's interrelated with all of the other subject areas that students need. The other important part of the shift is that we in education have remained for too long stuck in an old paradigm. And that old paradigm has been that everything was siloed in the way in which we organize children, all by batches, by the year you're born, and that's when you start school. And when you get to be adults, you're not necessarily in a batch. You may be in a proximity of a batch, but you pretty much go out into the world and you learn to relate to people at all different ages. The other is that we batched everything or siloed everything by subject area. This is ELA, this is math, this is science, this is health. And in doing so, what we created were these silos of separate educational accomplishments. And it's what's more important today, and what you'll see, and what has always been true in career and technical education, is teaching children and students in career pathways how to solve a problem. And in order to solve that problem, I need to know these various subjects, and I need to know them well enough to be successful at solving that problem. So that's the other part that's a major shift. What does it look like? I know that each of us have put different information at your tables this morning. At ESM, you'll have this card, and it'll show you a little bit about what our CTE programs may look like. Some of them you'll be familiar with. Certainly, we do have a transportation technology, transportation systems. The one that you might be most familiar with is automotive technology. We build a car every year. So this most recent year, we built a 1967 Camaro, because it was the 50th year of the Camaro. And we raffled it for $104,000. All that money goes back in. 2 years ago, we built a 1965 Mustang, and that raffled for $66,000. So you can see in that short, and we have tickets coming in from all around the world. But what's most important to know is that the students are hands-on, mind-on. They're doing something and they're seeing what works, what doesn't work. They're seeing the results of their labor. They could be at the high school until 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. But they're also learning that it's not just about the automotive engine, it's also about the plane engine, the train engine, the bus engine. So it's about applying the various aspects of science and technology and math. What do I need to know? Whether it's our construction technology, what do I need to know in these other areas? The other part about our career and technical offerings is the expansion of them to include, for example, Cisco courses, where students can become network administrators. Students can learn how to repair and to take apart and to put back together a computer. Those are very much needed professions that and preparations for our workforce that we need. CNC controlled types of measurements and types of applications, rather than the ones that we were learning 10, 15, 20 years ago, are what advanced manufacturing will need today. The other booklet that I've put at your table is our Career Pathways booklet. We have a school to college and advisory committee, and we've developed this in collaboration with business, higher ed, and our partners within the pre-K-12 environment, because it's important for us to expose children to the careers that perhaps didn't exist when their parents were growing up, that they need to know about, and the careers that still we're not sure will exist by time they graduate from high school and or from college. So in doing that, we want them to really associate, what am I interested in? What am I talented in? Where do I find myself drawn to? And then what skills and information do I need to acquire? Again, more so in a problem-solving way. I'll use an example of the problem-solving that many of you may relate to. Almost 2 years ago, I had a torn meniscus in my knee. Well, I had to go in for surgery. Now, 10 to 15 years ago, I would have gone in, they would have cut my knee open, they would have repaired it, it would have been in a cast, I would have been healing for weeks, I would have been on crutches. I went to a surgical center, and after 2 hours, I walked out with a cane. 2 hours. That is because the medical profession has realized that they have to integrate the technologies into a digital world, not just make better scalpels and have better healing procedures. So that's what we're talking about today. The world that we're living in has moved from an industrial and factory age, which we clearly benefited from, to a digital and advanced technological world. Career and technical education is seated right in the middle of all that, and so are almost every career that we can talk about today. The other part is the importance of partnerships. For years, education has been a very siloed, I go to school and then I go to college and or career. Education must, from its onset, be partnered with higher education, with business partners, with community partners, with government and others, so that we're all working together on building a strong learning environment. Our eighth graders, 120, spent one entire day last week at King & King Architects. They arrived in the morning, they were greeted by Jim King, one of the CEOs, and he greeted them to say, we've hired you today, and here is your task. They were there the entire day working in small groups on a project that King & King is now going to evaluate and give them feedback on. Those are the real life experiences our students need. We can't any longer think that they're going to really understand what the working world is like by keeping them in an isolated 770 square foot classroom from the 1960s or 70s. I benefited from that education, but today it will no longer prepare me for today's world. So I'm hoping that these conversations are more built around the questions that you will ask us. I hope that plants some seeds of interest, and thanks for being here today. I also have to share it with you because it's one of the most exciting moments of my life. I had a grandson that was born on August 26th, and he was born 3 weeks early. And I do this also because for all children, they need to be born into a world in which we will best prepare them for their future today and for the rest of their lives. Thanks.
So good morning. As I said, my name is Robert Leslie, and I kind of took a non-traditional pathway into education. And when I was a graduate at SUNY Oswego, I kind of decided to go right into working at Carrier Corporation. I was one of those students who was just amazed by all the mechanical things. So one of my college professors arranged a tour for us to go through all the plants at that time. And people typically in that program at Oswego were prepared to go into teaching. I was lured by the machinery and the chance to work on all these great things. So I spent the first 20 years of my career working in the manufacturing world. And I think that really helped me grow as I become an educator and an administrator, because it kind of gave me an insight of what the expectation was for students. And I never knew what math really meant until I had a VP for one of the North American operations who was kind of enlightening us about how we were not effective in the math calculations on a product that was supposed to be built. And that really brought math relevance to me tremendously when your boss is screaming at you about you didn't do the math right. So I come back, leaving the the manufacturing world, I made a jump to go back into the classroom. Which was one of the greatest experiences I had because I had the opportunity to work with students about critical thinking and about problem solving. Not about teaching them just information of a book, but how to get them to think about what we're doing and how to prepare them to think through problems that they don't even know what the problems are going to be yet. And I think that's why we're so excited about career and technical education, because that's what career and technical education does. It's not as much about learning the technical content, which typical vocational training was in the past. It's more about preparing our kids to be thinkers and to be critical thinkers and to understand how to work in teams. So if on the tables out in front of you, you'll have a folder from Syracuse City School District. And in that folder, you'll see something called Career Readiness Standards. And in that Career Readiness Standards, there's 12 standards that we follow. And these are national standards about how we prepare kids for all of this, and I'll term it as soft skills, the things that they need to be effective employees in companies and organizations and wherever they may land, all right? And it's not the technical side. It's those skills of how do I make sure I'm at work on time? How do I make sure I know how to communicate? How do I make sure I know what it's like to work on a team and be successful? How do I deal with conflict? So all of the Syracuse City programs focus as around the core career readiness skills is a focus when we start with them in ninth grade. And we're starting to push these skills lower and more down towards the elementary grades because we need kids prepared to come into our class and our environment ready to go to work. So just a little background about Syracuse City. I became the director for Career and Tech Ed in 2014. And when I started there, we had about 350 students on CTE pathways. Some of our traditional programs, the culinary, our auto programs like that. And so there was a Blue Ribbon Task Force study done in 2012 that identified, I think it was 19 different career pathways. And so when I came on, my charge from the superintendent at the time was to start to look at how do we build these pathways and how do we get kids excited about opportunities that they don't even know yet. So we went from roughly four different pathways to 19 in a very quick time. And if you look in the folder, there's also a line card. So currently right now we have 24 different career and technical education pathways. So I want you to think back in how many of you would have known what geospatial technology was, and how many of you would have dealt with cybersecurity and computer forensics. These are some of the new exciting pathways we have, and this is our world today. When you watch the TV and every day you hear there's been a cyber attack on something, we're preparing kids to go into those fields and to get them excited about that learning and why it's so critical and how they think through that process. So currently at Syracuse City School District, we have 24 career and technical education pathways. We try to make sure they're aligned with the business needs in the community and what's the up and coming forecast of what the jobs will be in our community, because we want our kids to stay in Syracuse. We really do. We're trying to encourage them, you know, get your education, prepare yourself for a career, come to Syracuse. And we also look for the points for kids that they're prepared coming right out of high school, but they're also prepared to go into our local community college, Onondaga Community College, or any of the other institutions that they want. They need to be prepared for all that. So it's college and career ready, and that's our goal coming off of our programs at Syracuse City. So just to give you a little bit about the numbers, so we started at roughly 352 students in 2014-15, and this year we're at 1,302 students on career and technical education pathways. So we start in ninth grade. When our kids, they go through a selection process. You'll also see in that folder a CTE Expo. And every year we hold an expo in January, and about 1,300 eighth graders get a chance to go through our expo. They get a chance to talk to students who are in these programs. They get a chance then to make a selection if this is something that they want to pursue as a career pathway. And from that, they make that selection, and then they get accepted into the program, and then they start their career pathway from ninth grade on. So we're very engaging with them. We find that having them in ninth grade helps with our retention numbers because they're very interested, they're very hooked, and they want to be there. They're excited about coming to class. So some of the other accomplishments that we've had at Syracuse City that I think I want to make sure we hit is that we've had a lot of changes that we've had to implement as we brought on 24 different career pathways. We've had to make some significant changes at state education. So as you can imagine, when I asked the state education department, I said, geez, we're gonna have a geospatial technology program. Do you have a teacher certification title for that? And there was no response back from State Ed on that one. So for roughly 2 years of my life, I think I've been an employee at State Ed because I've been out there so many times trying to convince them that we have to do creative and new titles for this to get teachers ready and prepared for these areas. So we've been able to influence State Ed, us, along with some of the other BOCES organizations like that, is they need to be a little bit more proactive. So I think some of the good things coming out of our current tech ed programs is that we're making our state a little bit more proactive about thinking about where our jobs are going to be in the future for our kids in our state, and then how do we prepare our teachers? Because CTE teachers are typically do not come through a traditional teaching pathway; they come from a business. So my cybersecurity teacher worked in an insurance agency as a cybersecurity specialist. My geospatial teacher was an actual geospatial technician who worked in the center out at Cayuga Community College for the geospatial, the Walsh Center out there. So they typically come from a non-traditional teaching pathway into the classroom. So as you can imagine, that also opens up a whole new opportunity for us to how do we accelerate the education of people coming from the business world to become teachers. So we've also partnered with SUNY Oswego in helping to develop that pathway. And we have a process now where we can take a person who is a non-teacher to teacher in a year and make them very effective. So some of the great things. So we're looking forward to it. We're also looking to expand our offerings for our career pathways. We're hoping that, you know, like I said, that as new technologies and new things come on to the job front for our students as we prepare them, we've got to be leading from an educational institution, not following. And I think that's all of us at the panel agree that that's where we want to be. So thank you very much.
They even applauded for you, Bob. Good morning. My name is Phil Grom, and I am the current Tech Ed Director at OCM BOCES. And I think all of us here, the exciting thing is we all share a real passion for CTE, and we all probably agree that we believe it's the future of our students, and we really have a responsibility to have a well-trained and effective workforce out there, and how critical it is to have students in these fields. And so I'm very excited to be here today, and I appreciate the welcome. So I was thinking about Bob's comments about his path, and I came through a traditional educational path. I came through as a social studies teacher, and then followed into administration. And I remember as a high school principal, remembering the students who would leave our campus and go to BOCES for half a day, and how they seemed to have real purpose of what they did in a passion, and they were forging careers. And some of the times we'll see high school students who sort of drift and don't have a direction. These students had a direction, and they were so proud of what they did. And you could see that they were mapping out what they were doing. So I remember when an opportunity came up to come to OCM BOCES, that was one of the draws. And if I think about our students now, our students are excited to be in our programs because, again, they come in, they have a purpose, they're working with their hands, they're problem solving. They're not sitting in five desks across and five desks deep with the traditional classroom. In fact, they come, that's what the conversation I have with our teachers is, they come to our programs because they need to learn differently. They need to be problem solvers and work hands-on and experience the real world. A little bit about OCM BOCES is we serve 23 of our component districts in Cortland, Onondaga, and Madison counties. We have 17 programs. Different programs, and eight of those programs, which I'll touch on a little bit, are actually embedded in business settings in industry throughout the region. Students come to us in their junior and senior year. They spend a half a day with us, and then they spend the other half a day at their home school. So those students that come to us actually are able to participate in all the activities from their home school district. Athletics, music, all the extracurriculars, and so between the credits they earn with us and the credits they earn at their high school, they're able to earn their diplomas. I think about what we're trying to do a little bit different, and Donna mentioned the paradigm shift about what we do, what we're doing now, and how we're drawing a different types of students. We still have a lot of our traditional programs at BOCES. We have our culinary arts and our construction tech, and our cosmetology program and auto tech programs. But over the past few years, we have really been trying to rethink our programs, and we have been partnering with some of the business community and actually putting our embedding our programs in the business setting. So I'm going to give you a good example, and I have to give Mr. Leslie here some credit, because when he was with BOCES, that was he did begin the initiative. It pains me to give him credit, but I'm going to.
But I did hire him, just so you know.
Well, we all make mistakes.
That's true.
So, but what about our initiative is try to really take some of our programs that are center-based and embed them in the business setting. I'll give you some examples. We have a physical therapy and rehabilitative professions program. And this program, we have partnered with Upstate Medical University, and students are, the class is actually conducted at Upstate Medical University. Our students attend there, they do not attend our center. So they're embedded in the program, and that way they have the opportunity to do clinical rotations in their field throughout the hospital. So think about this. Think about going to school and actually going to a business setting for your school and learning. The nice piece about that is not only are they working and learning in Upstate Medical Center in their field of study, but we've also partnered with Onondaga Community College, and we are adjunct instructors are pushing into our classes a couple days a week, and students are taking college-level courses. So students are earning their English credits. They're learning anatomy and physiology. And so they're earning 15 to 18 credit hours before they leave. And the nice part of this program is that the students are taking anatomy and physiology, which is really the gateway course for the medical professions. And so we have a wonderful partnership. So our students are attending classes in a business setting, and they're earning college credits and walking out the door. And what an edge they're having over their peers of having that experience in a business setting and getting hands-on. Not only do we have that program, but we our automotive technology program, we partner with Driver's Village. And if you're familiar with Driver's Village out in North Syracuse, we've actually have a classroom right in Driver's Village. We have one of our instructors there, and then we have assigned to us some of the bays. But the nice part about that is our students are getting experience working with the technicians all throughout Driver's Village, working side by side. They're working on equipment that we, quite frankly, could not afford to put in our centers, updated technology. It's also great professional development for our instructor, because he's also learning from the technicians at the same time, and we're it's cutting edge. And these vehicles are actually the vehicles that they're working on are actually the vehicles that that go off to auction. So they're getting the vehicles ready. So it's really, again, a hands-on, real-world experience these students that they couldn't get anywhere else. Just a quick story. We had a student, and it's not on Dodd Community College, so you won't be offended by this. But we did have a student who had applied to and was accepted by a technical school for automotive technology, which was wonderful. But while he was working at Driver's Village, he was offered a job by one of the auto dealers within there, and he'd been working. And so when they found out that he was going to be going to this school, they made a counter proposal to him and said, look, you come and train with us, we'll pay for your training, and you'll have a job when you're done. And then if you want to go on and get a degree beyond that, after a few years, you can still do that. You can go part-time and do that, but we'll pay for your training. And so he talked it over with his parents, and they made that decision. He's going to be working, and so he's eliminated some of that debt. And I imagine he'll go on to OCC part-time and get a two-year degree. And something.
We'll find them.
Yeah, we'll find them. But the point is there's options for students, and we know that especially with the four-year schools, the debt that some of our students are saddled with, this is another opportunity for them. We've also partnered in our Cortland schools. We have an early childhood education program that is actually embedded in a Head Start program. So instead of trying to recruit students in, students are in the setting itself, getting that firsthand experience in early childhood education. We have a New Vision program too, and I'm not sure if anyone's familiar with the New Vision model, but this model is a one-year sort of immersion program for our students in their senior year. And we, for example, have a criminal justice program that is housed at the Onondaga County Sheriff's Department. Again, students are working in that setting, spending their year at the Sheriff's Department, interacting with law enforcement, going to the courthouse, doing ride-alongs, just getting all the experience that we could not give at our centers in our classroom. So it is embedded. It is everyday internship opportunities. And just the one other program I just want to highlight too, which has been really successful, is we had a graphics program that was on campus. And as we look to how do we continue to evolve with our programs, we had a great relationship with WCNY and Bob Dano. And I'm familiar with Bob Dano, but he's very forward thinking. And so we met. He's the president of WCNY, and so we had a meeting with him. And Mr. Leslie was in on this as well. And we said, what if we could move our program into WCNY? And so we rebranded our program. We call it Media Marketing Communications. We sat down in the summer. We sat down with Onondaga Community College. We sat down with WCNY and our staff, and we crafted a program. We aligned our curriculum with OCC's program. And we matched up, and our students attend WCNY. They don't even really have much of a classroom, except for when they take in their college classes. Their classroom is the studio. They're in every aspect of the studio, and they welcome those students. Those students are like employees. They have polo shirts that says WCNY. They have badges. They are part of the staff. In fact, they're coming back in the summer and working with them. And they are getting more experience than we could ever imagine at our centers. So we are trying to change the face of CTE and making it real world, hands-on, problem solving. They're actually running events at WCNY, and they're tapping into different experiences. So these opportunities students are getting, and we're drawing different types of students. So we have students who will go into the career pathway. They'll take a certification test. And they'll move right into a career pathway. But we're drawing students now who are thinking about four-year schools, two-year schools, starting in programs and thinking differently about the opportunities that walking away with 15 to 18 college credits, having an edge, have an opportunity. So it is different. It is different what we're doing with students. It's not your grandmother's or grandfather's BOCES anymore. There are opportunities for all students that come into our doors, and they're getting real purpose. And I think we are serving a real need in our local and our national economy.
So you can imagine when students that have been through these programs come to the college, it's kind of a different experience for us, right? These are students who have seen work done, and we know in preparing students to enter the world of careers, that's one of the most important things. When I graduated from high school a million years ago, 65% of the jobs in my community at that time were unskilled. About 15% of the jobs required some kind of college or technical training, and about 25% were professional jobs that required a bachelor's degree. Fast forward to now, and the world that these students are walking out into, 65% of the jobs require some kind of technical skill. 15% are unskilled, and still 25% require a bachelor's degree. So what's really changed in the interval is not the professional, you know, how many lawyers do we need, or how many people need to go to medical school, or how many people need to work in accounting firms, but what's really changed is that middle skills part of the economy. How many people need some level of technical training or technical skill development? And that's really changed how community colleges have approached preparing people for the workforce. We've always thought that college was the ultimate career technical training, right? Everybody eventually will go to work. Even the English majors, I am living proof, even the English majors go to work. But the question really was, back when I emerged as an administrator, the question really was, how do I prepare this student for the one career that she is going to have? for these students coming to us, we know, how do we prepare these active critical thinkers and learners for the 5 to 6 careers they're going to have over their working life as the conditions in the workforce continue to change and push educators to step up their game even more. So how does that change some of the college programs? About 85% of our students are working. So we can count on them having seen something of the world of work. Sometimes they've seen a world of work that they want to be part of for a long time. Typically, the career and tech kids that come to us from the high school programs have made that kind of evaluation for themselves and say, yes, I want to continue on in this electronic media communications field, or I really like the automotive technology profession that I began on. But a lot of kids come to us with work experience that's patchy. They 6 months at McDonald's and a year and a half at Walgreens, and all they know about work is they don't want to do that. So how do we help them? How do we incorporate career exploration, career development, and flexible career skills into their preparation while they're at OCC? In the old model, there was a career center you could go to and they would help you write a resume. They might practice an interview with you so that you could go and get a job, because we assumed that the rest of it happened by some kind of magic. If you go into our career center now, the first thing that you're invited to do is engage in an electronic career search where you can learn about the kinds of jobs that you haven't yet seen. And you can see videos of that work being done. You can see analyses across the country of where is that work? Do we have it in New York, or is that something you'd have to move to Utah to be able to do? How much does it pay? How much education do you need to have a chance to get into that field? And where would you have to go to get that education? And how much would that education cost? So we're really trying to make the students aware of how to prepare for the kind of niche careers that they are interested in examining. And like my colleagues here, we hope that when they get to the end of that exploration, they make a decision that says, I want a job that I can do in Central New York, because we have the most resources to support those students. And how do we support them? Our students are asked to engage in internships, fairly standard, but also in service learning, a kind of a new effort where we don't need businesses to create long-term opportunities for students all the time. We can engage students in short-term service projects where they can take what they're learning in the classroom and apply it in a work setting. This works particularly well with the broad range of nonprofit agencies in Central New York that we work with. So even students who are learning to be accountants, well, every nonprofit entity has an accountant, has an accounting department, and could use some help. So our account, yeah, I'll sign you up. So students are able to take what they're learning and spend some time in a business setting, applying what they're learning and testing out, is this the right career for me before I spend the next 5 years getting an MBA? So we've been able to, I think, operationalize those things at OCC so that even students who come to us saying, you know, I really want to study something that's going to require me to get a bachelor's or a master's, we're trying to infuse career information in the very beginning. And I will tell you a story of a group of students who helped us learn how to do that last year. We had 5 students. They were physics students. Now, when you think about studying physics, you're in it for the long haul. And these were, you know, we have freshmen and sophomores, so they were looking at a long-term engagement in studying physics. And they wanted a real-life experience. So we found a contest with NASA. And we showed it to these kids and we said, look, they're looking for people like you, freshmen and sophomores, that are interested in applying what you're learning in physics to solve real-world problems. And NASA put out a challenge, and they said, you know, we're studying asteroids and we need to be able to land equipment on an asteroid, so we need a device to be invented and manufactured so that we can link our space exploration tool and stick it on this asteroid. Well, the kids took this challenge, 5 of them, and they worked with some of our engineering faculty, and they worked with some physics faculty, and they went down to the geology department and figured out what's the surface of an asteroid look like, feel like, how does it behave. And they invented a triangular auger device that they then worked with our manufacturing technology people to produce on a 3D printer out of some composite resin. I don't know anything about this, but they explained it to me. And they submitted this design, and they were selected, and they were one of the teams that went to the Houston Neutral Buoyancy Lab to try this out in a zero-gravity setting simulated underwater to see if the device that these freshman and sophomore physics students invented would work. They were there for a week. They spent time with a NASA engineer, and they had their own astronaut who put on his gear and went into the neutral buoyancy lab with their device while they were in the control room telling him how to operationalize the device on this simulated asteroid. And after the third attempt, their device worked. Now, yeah, it was pretty awesome. That's career and technical education. It's not, you know, sitting at a desk and, you know, learning the composite nature of an asteroid. It's needing to know what an asteroid is and going and finding out and using that information to change your design and figuring out what materials would work. And I think when I think about the changing nature of current technical education, I think about those five students, all of whom, except one who was a freshman at the time, the other ones have transferred on. This absolutely solidified their commitment to physics, and they walk around in NASA hats because that's where they'd like to work. So I think when you hear my colleagues talk about the kinds of real life experiences we're trying to provide for students so that they can explore what they know, learn what they don't know, figure out how to get that knowledge and apply it to the problems of a profession, that's really what we're thinking about now in terms of career and technical education. So I'd like to throw the floor open for questions. We hope you have some hard ones. Thanks.
Thanks so much for your presentation. I actually have two questions. One is, Mr. Leslie, you had alluded to a problem with the state not having the right categories for what you needed from a teacher. Are there other sort of institutional barriers to implementing some of these changes? I'm thinking of the teachers' unions. There may be others I'm not thinking of. And then my second question is how are you connecting with local economic development organizations to leverage the changes you're making and the workforce you're developing so we can lift up the whole region?
There's several barriers that we deal with in education, and I think Phil and I both deal with it because of the age of students. And one of the things that we're always working to figure out on how to get through is the workers' comp liability of students, younger students, onto certain types of floors for manufacturing. There's an age limit sometimes of 18, and you know, so these are the things that we need to have our legislators think through as we try to bridge that experience, because the biggest thing that we try to do as an educational institution is get students out early. So in ninth grade, we want them out job shadowing, we want them out touring, we want them on the college campuses, but we need to make it so that it's not a burden on our businesses, because the last thing we want to do is trap them with, you know, some type of workers' comp legislation that says, well, I don't want to be involved because it's too much red tape for us.
The businesses want our students, they want to engage. But sometimes they're a little reticent because of that piece, the age limit, and some of the regulations in that area. But they certainly are eager to engage us because they need workers. They need a workforce.
So we're working on that. We have Syracuse City. We have a couple different levels of councils that help guide our programs and provide direction. We have what's called a partnership council. I call it the 30,000 foot view. And it's a lot of our MACNI, Center State, and a lot of our higher education partners and a lot of our business partners that are on, and we work through different subcommittees towards barriers. And barriers are a big thing. And I think we've been able to accomplish a lot of things at the state ed level in changing what they're doing, but I think it's going to get larger as we get more exposure, and we want more exposure for students, because we always talk about pointing at, you know, giving a light at the end of the tunnel for kids to see what they can be. And we want to start that in ninth grade, because once we have them have a vision of what they think they can be, it gives them a goal to work towards. And you know, some of the barriers are some of the things we've got to deal with. So,
I think the other, to piggyback on that, is that the barriers with regard to, and I, many of you know me, so you know that I really do say what's on my mind and really do kind of push the agenda out there. I think we have to. Someone has to begin to promote the change that's needed. And what I will share with our teachers, because they can be influenced by the fact that I want to take this risk, but am I going to, in taking this risk, be somehow jeopardizing my own career because I'm so much channeled by or measured by these assessments over here that we call these standardized tests? So we have to keep pushing that. And what I share with them is policy changes because of practice. Don't wait for the memo to come from state ed. I think our commissioner is great, but we're not going to get a memo on innovation in education. We're not. We are going to get, it's a compliance organization. They're complying with the federal government, and the federal government complies with whatever whoever happens to be deciding on what the sources are for the funding. So we have to, as educators, be showing that practice. That's why becoming one of the first 27 ecosystems in the country, and now we're networked with, there are now 56. We have to hope that we're influencing the agenda at the national level and at the state level, because those policies are barriers in many ways. I went to school in New York. I have a Regents diploma. I'm sure if I asked you to raise your hand, how many of you went to school? Think about it. What should have changed by now? 180 days, still have it. The bell rings, school begins, the bell rings, you change class, the bell rings, you go to lunch. That's a factory model. It was built on a factory model. If you come to our middle school today, there are no bells. Who's going to go to work where there's a bell ringing right now? You know what I mean? So if we don't change that, and there's no memo from state ed that says you have to have this period and this period, and there isn't. We deal with these artificial constraints that we need to free ourselves from. So those barriers, we really have to push the paradigm with. In our middle school, it's transdisciplinary learning. The teachers work as a team. You have a problem to solve. How will you get this problem solved? And in working with that, you need science and math and ELA, and you have to be good at it, not just somewhat get it. You have to be good at it. But students are driven to that. We did one project-based learning unit in the eighth, we've done many, but just to give you an example, it was a 10-day problem-solving activity. 10 days, 110 students on that team, not one student absent a single day. Do you know what that's like? Eighth grade. Not once, because I want to be there. I have parents who will say to me, I don't know what you're doing at that middle school, Dr. Desia, but my son or daughter, I used to think I was going to have to get the biggest alarm clock. They can't wait to get out of school, out of bed in the morning to get there. That's what we want, learning that's so exciting. And then on the economic development area, we follow very much what's happening in our region. Joe Vargo and Randy Wolkin with MACNE. So we know in this region we need advanced manufacturing, and we need to be moving in that digital world for advanced manufacturing. We also know we need precision medical. We have one of the finest precision medicine is very important in our region. We need to be able to think about what that means. We also know that in the area of drone technology, we have Tony Basil that's going to lead that area. We know that drone technology is going to be, and we happen to be one of the sites in the country. So we know that those particular areas, but we also know we need to do other aspects. So for example, in our high school, there is a student-led credit union. Core Federal Credit Union. The students are operating the credit union 3 days a week. They can do their banking and all of that. It's no longer that I'm going to give my child an account when they're graduating and going to college. We have kids doing banking at school right through the system, and the high school students go to the elementary and the middle school because they're teaching the students about having a savings account or having how do they manage their money. But the students at the high school are doing all the kinds of things in banking that they need to do with real life application. And that's where the other part of the barrier. I get that we'll always have to have some standardized test over here that tells us how we're doing in ELA, how we're doing in math, but the notion that keeps us paralyzed from giving kids real life experiences. You heard each of us give an example where kids were allowed to make mistakes so that they could learn how to do it better. That standardized test never gives you that chance. You either have the right answer or you don't. And so that is paralyzing us right now. And it's so old world, it isn't funny. I mean, and I say that nicely to the commissioner, because she may be hamstrung by it. Because let me tell you what the real source is. The source is that our federal funding comes from how we do on an ELA and a math test. Really, I can't wait until somebody discovers we need to figure out how we do on solving problems in our world. And then we'll have a better educational system.
This has really been interesting. My wife, mother of 8 children, and her friend from college, mother of 8 children, decided they wanted to learn something about auto mechanics. So they went off to your programs, and when they got there, the men around them, or the boys around them, said, "What are you girls doing here? Why aren't your boyfriends here?" Okay. What I want to know is, how has the world changed for women, and how has it changed for minorities in these tech programs?
I'll start, but I'm sure we have more and more. We actually do have females that built that Camaro and built that Mustang. Do we have as many as we have males? No, because it's still somewhat, you know, perceived that these are male types of, and the same thing that we're doing with STEM. We had, were funded by AT&T to run a STEM women's camp, which we've done 2 years at Lemoyne. We're now looking to run a STEM coding camp for young women. The US Department of State was just here to meet with myself and Joe Vargo about how to be able to do that, because there's more and more we need to get that into our elementary and our middle schools so that young women see the career pathways and the opportunities that they have. Is it shifting? Yes. Is it shifting enough to balance it? Not yet. And the same as same aspect of minorities. I think it will have more of a shift when we get away from the notion of sorting and separating our children. And when we separate and sort our children at young ages, for no matter what it may be, whether it's education, special education, whatever it might be, we actually do a disservice to them. So we have to be able to give them an awakening and an awareness at a young age that they can do this, and then experience with other children that they can do it, to remove some of the barriers of the perceptions that it's not for females, or that you're not smart enough to do this. I mean, those are the paradigms or the perceptions and the stereotypes that we're trying to break. And that's why I think these kinds of forums help us tremendously.
So I would add that the leader of the NASA team was a young woman of color who's now a junior at RIT. But the hardest challenge that that team faced early on was they also expected her to take all the notes. So, you know, we try to teach young women that, you know, that you're in the room doesn't mean you're the secretary. Yeah. So I think that you asked the question makes me hopeful. But a lot of our young women students, a lot of our students of color are still reticent to assert themselves in areas where we know they have the skills and the talent. And so I think the more you can help us provide these kinds of opportunities and encourage those students, that's how we continue to work on that.
So I would just add that, you know, we really work hard at that. We need a diversified workforce. We need diversified programs. And when we do a couple of things, when we go out and do our visitations and to the high schools and do our recruiting, we will bring students, and we try to bring non-traditional students into those visitations. And when we have visitations at our programs, we make sure that we get the females into the welding, into the auto tech programs. We get them in and say, look. And we have a lot of females in our programs now. It's growing. It is not, as Donna said, it is not close to being equal, but we encourage it. We need it. And let me tell you, they follow the rules better. But
I'm not sure that's a good thing.
No. But I mean, in terms of being good students, they're excellent. And it is good for all of our students to have diversity in our programs, and if you look at the faces that are coming in our programs, this is my 7th year of BOCES, and I don't have any data in front of me, but anecdotally I could tell you that we're becoming more and more diverse. We're reaching out to all students and all populations, because we need to, and it's the right thing to do.
and I think at Syracuse, it's one of our goals. And I think starting in the middle schools is where we paint pictures for students where they can see themselves in things. And I think that's one of our most critical things. The diversity of our students is some of our strengths. And I think businesses realize that that's what they're looking for because, you know, diverse students bring different perspectives on things in business culture. And that's what's needed. So we're very big on that to make sure that our kids are seeing all the different opportunities that are out in front of them, but also getting them out there and painting the picture that shows that they can be that young lady can be the welder and the leader on that team for that group, because it's just, you know, we need to do that, and we need to be more cognizant of that fact as educators, and also making sure that our teachers and our school counselors are also stepping up their game a little bit to push our students a little bit to make sure that they realize that they can be that. And I think so. We're definitely trying to address it. It's always an issue, and it will always be. And hopefully, at some point, it won't be.
Great question.
Thanks very much for the presentation. It's very interesting. I'm wondering if the City School and ESM, if you could briefly describe a typical day for the child. It is starting with getting on the bus, and I have another question too. I'm wondering if there's. If there's a stigma attached to kids that are enrolled in the program, maybe with just the other students, that they're the losers, the kids that can't make it in traditional classroom setting?
Well, at ESM, if you come to our high school, you're right there. You're not getting on the bus and going anywhere else when you get to our high school. And this was created actually decades ago at ESM, so it's part of our culture within our community. It was believed that our kids should be educated within our community. So it's nothing against what Phil's doing with BOCES. For many of our very tiny, tiny school districts, they may need to be able to work collaboratively in doing that. But at ESM, the high school was actually designed multiple years ago so that we do have all of the programs built right into the mainframe of the high school. We build a car every year. We build a home every year. We have the banking right in the school lobby. It was built right into the main lobby. It has the Diebold safe, and it has the security cameras, you know, and that was paid for by our business partner. So when you arrive, you're there. There is not a stigma that it's separate, sorted, that you're going somewhere. You go somewhere because it's going to be related to what you're studying. So we're a late starting high school. We don't start until 9. So if you're in our early childhood program, you're actually on a shuttle in the morning. And if you're one of those high school students, you're getting picked up on a bus by 7:15, 7, because you're going to go to an elementary school. And for the time between 7:30 and 8:45, you're going to be in one of the kindergarten classrooms, real life application, and then you're shuttled to the high school. If you're in our class in which we're studying with SUNY ESF, and it's real life studying aquaponics and those kinds of areas of study, brown houses, greenhouses, you're going to actually be shuttled to the village of Manoa, and you're going to work at the what we call SERF, Clean Educational Resource Facility, but previously known to the village of Manoa as the wastewater treatment plant. So in other words, you know, but you're working on real life research and real life application. And I think that's the other part of this that's important that we've tried to illustrate. This way, it's not a stigma attached to you're in a program. Your field of study is out in the real world as well as at our high school. So that's a little bit different. And, you know, having worked in Syracuse City for 31 years, it's very much Bob will tell you.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that a typical school day for our kids, and they come in, you know, they're there, they're very engaged. And there's the stigmatism, I don't think, is there as much as it used to be as far as I'm entering a vocational program. Our kids compete to get into our CTE programs. All of our CTE programs are tied to college credit. Some of our mechanical, electrical, technology pathway programs that are partnered with OCC, kids earn 30 college credits. Why they're still in high school and then continue their associate's degree at OCC. So the stigmatism that if you enter into a CTE program, there's no difference because the kids still take the same Regents requirements that a student who doesn't enter in. The difference is the kids that come into the CTE programs get that exposure to different things that you don't get if you don't come into there. So, you know, if we're going to be up at SUNY Upstate And there's a chance that, you know, one day a month that they're up there and they're working in the meds program and they're being exposed to health professions. Kids that don't typically come onto that pathway don't get that exposure and don't get to see all that avenue. So I think if anything, it's become more competitive to get into the CTE programs at Syracuse City School District. And some of the concerns that we have are our capacity issues. As kids get excited, you know, how do we provide the opportunities and make sure we have enough opportunities for students? So I think that old analogy that you're in a career pathway, that's kind of going away. And I think some of the things we need to change are some of our parents. Some of our parents still believe that career and technical education is a vocational setting. It's not. It's a preparatory path for college and career. And I think that's what we want to make sure we're reinforcing. And the rigor and the academics associated with it is high or higher than a traditional educational path that we're asking for our kids.
And the other is it our students, because it is in the mainframe of the high school, and so whatever the program is just right down the hall, our students don't necessarily have to be in a CTE pathway. They can take it as an elective. So we had a young person who is at Hofstra now studying engineering, but loved working on the car and would do that as part of one course and the after-school program. And so you can do that, and it creates a heterogeneous grouping of students. So you have students that are going to a variety of different, we have students that may take one class of culinary because they, and actually, it always just warms my heart. You know, usually it's two or three members of the football team that are in the culinary program learning to cook. You know, so it's real life application. So the kids, it was interesting because the kids interviewed me when I became superintendent, and one of the things I asked them was, what would you want me to preserve? And they said, Dr. Desiato, some students like athletics, some like music, some like art, some like science, but we're one high school and we're designed so that everyone belongs, and we want you to preserve that. We have our pathways and our career interests because we're different, but what we're liking is we're all one ESM. And so I think that was from the mouths of students. You know, they see that we're not all going to be on the football team. We're not all going to be in band. We're not all going to perform on the stage this year when we do Les Mis, but we are gonna all be graduating from the same high school. So I think that's the other part. The kids get that. They have to have a sense of belonging, and it's okay to like different things.
Another point, our 24 career tech ed pathways are scattered through all of our five high schools. So it's not just one school. Students, no matter where they live in the city, have opportunities to go to that pathway program. And they make that election in eighth grade when they decide, if I live on the east side of the city and I want to attend the law enforcement program at PSLA, then that's where my primary school becomes. So they attend 4 years at that school. So it's a little different than we don't bus students to programs. Students actually become part of the school and part of the culture there. So.
Can you get that one young man?
We have run out of time, which is always a good thing. I want to thank all of you so, so much for taking the time this morning to come down and speak to us. It was a great program.
Thank you.